Okay, we do have our guest on the line, and they've got lengthy bios, but I think it's better if they introduce themselves. Bill Still and Pat Carmack made an amazing film. Bill Carmack, of course, is the narrator, and Pat's the producer, and they both, I guess, co-produce it together. I remember seeing this when it first came out in 98. We aired it over and over again. It was actually Jeff Davis put it on tape and turned it in, and it aired probably 50 times here locally. Woke up so many people in Austin. It was so popular. Everybody was, I mean, it had a buzz on the street, and it just methodically, in a very genteel way, an expert way, lays out their whole system, how they engineer collapses, how they engineer depressions, and they're doing that now. And so not only will we talk about the film the next hour and a half, we're also going to talk about, these guys are monetary specialists, and I've heard them really put forward a better plan than even Ron Paul has. And I love Ron Paul, but I do tend to agree with them that we don't want to have a gold standard because the globalists own 95% of the gold, and that would give them a new monopoly, but not as bad as we have now. They have a monetary reform act that it's at the end of their film that I remember studying 10 years ago that is very, very effective. And again, their film, The Money Masters, 3 hours plus long, available right now. Get a master's degree in how they're the key to the globalist power, how they bought up the world through fraud, how they control the currency, is available at Infowars.com. And so without further ado, we go to Bill Still and Pat Carmack. Let's go to Bill first. Bill, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you woke up, who you are. Then we'll go get that from Pat. And then I want to go through the history of the bankers, you know, an abbreviated history, who they are, and now currently what they're doing.
Well, I started out life as a newspaper editor here in Northern Virginia. And one day an old gentleman called me up and said, "Boy, have I got a story for you. There's no gold left in Fort Knox." And I just kind of rolled my eyes and said, "Yeah, okay." And you learn to develop a standard response because you get a lot of crazies calling in. And that is, you say, "Well, send me something in the mail." Most people don't have anything to send. Well, 2 days later, I got about a 2-inch thick packet of stuff. This guy was an Ohio implements manufacturer. He had moved to Northern Virginia to pursue his hobby, which was to try to get the United States government to provide a physical audit of the gold reserves in Fort Knox. It's required to do so by law on an annual basis, yet one has not been done since 1957. This guy obviously knew what he was talking about. He letters from Treasury officials, Mint officials, of course, all the senators and congressmen and all that. But it just took me about 15 years to figure out what in the heck does gold have to do with the Federal Reserve and any of this. And I finally figured it out, wrote a book called On the Horns of the Beast, the Federal Reserve and the New World Order, which Pat read. He called me up and he said, let's do something else. Let's do a video. And so off we went, and that's how it got started.
Okay, fantastic. Let's now go ahead and get Pat Carmack to introduce himself and tell us how he went down the rabbit hole.
Well, I was in the oil business in Oklahoma, and you naturally get involved in finance, and the prosperity of the banks and their growth and their rapidly increasing wealth attracted my attention, and just from a business perspective, I wanted to understand why the banks were doing well regardless of the general state of the economy.
And you discovered it was fractional reserve banking, I would guess.
Ultimately, that's right. It's fractional reserve banking, and it's rooted in the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. There was a long history to it, and Bill had already done an excellent job probing into that. But as Bill mentioned, we wanted to put it in a more accessible format because there's actually a lot of books on this topic. It's just people don't read them, they're unfamiliar with them, and they don't get press.
What did you do in the oil business?
Everything, exploration, production, owned a utility company.
Wow. You kind of sound like a landman.
No, I'm an attorney, actually.
Yeah.
But,
you know, most landmen are, but anyways.
A lot of them are, you're right. But I got out of the oil business back in 91 and redirected my attention elsewhere. And one of the things that shortly after that we did was Bill and I connected and did the video, which took about 6 months and was filmed all over the world, and now we ship it all over the world. As you mentioned, it's kind of a classic now on the subject because it is partly a history and there's nothing like it. This goes back to the origins of it. And
but now
it.
We're living with what you, at the end of the film you say is going to happen, how they're going to basically devalue the currency and consolidate. And now we see them. And what is it like to see the blind general public guys who you try to tell they're devaluing the dollar, and they just say, what's that?
Well, it's interesting because we were far enough ahead of our time, so the times are just catching up to us. Hopefully we weren't so far ahead that we'll get forgotten in the shuffle.
I first saw your film in 98. When did it come out?
96.
Maybe it was 97 I saw it. I know it was somewhere, you know, right when it first came out. We've got about a minute before we break. When we get back, where should we start, Bill and Pat?
Well, probably on the root of the problem, because it's not, you know, the superficial economic problems, which are serious, like unemployment and so on, deficit, but deeper, the root of the economic problem we're facing.
All right.
Is the cause of most world poverty at this point. Fairly important subject.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing more important than understanding where all of this New World Order power flows from. Why are they able to finance it all? Well, they literally control the issuance of currency and credit and liquidity. These are amazing individuals, Bill Still and Pat Carmack. The Money Masters, the film, we are carrying it on DVD at InfoWars.com. Only $19.95, ladies and gentlemen, to get the full history of the true owners of the planet. Now, they got control of the planet through fraud. That means it's illegitimate. That means we can declare independence against these robber barons. We're talking about the owners of the globe. They did it through a massive scam, a fraud, a trick of the money changers, of the goldsmiths. And Bill Still tells me the real expert, the brain behind the film, is Pat Carmack. So we'll talk to them both here on air now. Okay, Bill, you've gotten up to the point of you start waking up, you start looking at banking, then you get connected in with Bill Still, you guys decide to make a film. Go through it. I mean, go through the big secret, the biggest game in town here.
Well, actually, we had some help from Milton Friedman during the making of the film. It kind of morphed slightly. I talked to Friedman out at Stanford. He was a professor at Stanford University. And he said, boy, you know, if you kill the Federal Reserve System, you haven't done anything unless you kill fractional reserve, too. And so that kind of reemphasized the importance of the fractional reserve system as well. I'll let Pat take it from there.
Well, what Dr. Friedman talked about with us and wrote to us about was, you know, as Bill mentioned, fractional reserve banking. And what it is, it's where the banks literally create money. And obviously, if banks can create money and they loan it at interest, then they have, you know, the goose that laid the golden egg, and the money starts flowing to them. And wealth gets concentrated in our society in the hands of bankers. And,
the key, I want you to speak to this, they have an incentive to get real assets, to overextend people's credit, wanting them to not pay it back so they get real assets.
Sure. Whenever there's a recession or depression, then they're able to foreclose on, you know, the people who can't pay the bills, and that's inevitable when they tighten credit.
Yeah. So that's their boom time is our bust. That's the vampire feeding.
That's right, but you have to understand it's mainly the big banks. The small banks often are victimized, too, because
yes,
they're not part of the, you know, of the insiders on the global scale.
Yes, it's always a shearing and consolidation period. Continue.
Well, for instance, you know, the five major banks in this country have over 1 million employees that work directly for them. Of the $6 trillion of deposits in banks, these five major banks control approximately $3.5 trillion. So over half of the money in the entire country is five major banks, and they have interlocking directorates. So it's very easy to see how they can control the entire economy. If anyone can control the economy, and they can, and this was one of Friedman's main critiques of the existing system, that's too much power to put in the hands of a handful of people.
And we're now seeing accelerated vertical integration.
Yes, and that's just concentration of wealth. It's happening on a global scale, too. I mean, there's virtually no nations that are exempt from this because they all have fallen into this fractional reserve banking system. In short, short, they've turned over to private banks or private corporations owned by private persons their economies. And the result is those people are using it to concentrate wealth even further. The UN released figures that approximately 200 people now own as much of the world as the poorest 3 billion. And in the United States, it's not far from that. 1% own 95% of the wealth. 13,000 families own as much as, in the United States, own as much as 20% of the poorest people in the United States, which would be about 60 million people.
But it's not just how much they own. By having that much wealth, they can also then steer and control the rest.
Yeah, it's leveraged very well. I mean, in other words, the average person owns a home, a car, and a few minor assets. When you exceed, you know, the power to pay your utilities and all, then you start putting it, at least if you're power hungry, you start putting it into media, into political, you know, donations to politicians. You know, you leverage it so that even though they're, you know, they may not own everything in this country yet, and they certainly don't, it's leveraged for maximum political power.
Right. The word, the operative word is hegemony. In other words, you don't have to own everything to control most of it. You know, everyone always complains these days that Washington doesn't seem to be responsive to the voting electorate. And this is why, because money has become concentrated into so few hands that they control the political process, whether the politicians going in think that they can do it or not. They ultimately can. So by eliminating, by reforming our monetary system, it not only gives more money to the rest of us, it also returns our democracy to us.
Absolutely. Please continue.
Well, we were talking about the root of it, and it's this fractional reserve banking. And we go into the history. It goes way back, but in terms of modern times, it really started in the 1600s in Sweden with Riksbank there, which made loans to the government, even though it was a private bank.
Okay, we're going to break in a moment, sir. Long segment coming up. So you want to have an interruption for a while. But I think it's important to go back even earlier so people get a basic grasp of what money is. You know, it's this agreed-upon symbol of wealth to get past just barter and maybe get into the tally sticks and things like you guys do. Because I think it's important to understand first that and then accelerate through. We're talking to some of the leading experts on the banking system, on the owners of the planet, Pat Carmack and Bill Still.
I hear the train coming, it's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine, I don't know when, I'm stuck in folds and prison.
Boy, I'd love to stick David Rockefeller, Queen Elizabeth, Queen Beatrix, Lord Rothschild in Folsom Prison.
But that train keeps rolling on down.
Not only do they control the issuance of currency, credit, liquidity, and steer the world's wealth, they're also into eugenics. That's the other part of this equation. They are very sinister people. And they control our destiny and future as long as they have control of the monetary system. We're going to go right back to our guest in just a moment. Again, the new film that I have produced, Truth Rising, the preeminent film, not just on how the 9/11 attacks were carried out, bombs in the buildings, but who the 9/11 Truth Movement is, how the media is trying to set us up with talking points saying we're terrorists, police walking up saying we're going to plant bombs on you and say you're terrorists. I mean, incredible stuff. World leaders being confronted. Willie Nelson, Jesse Ventura, Martin Sheen, George Carlin. We interviewed him a few months ago, just died. All in the new film, available on DVD at Infowars.com. And while you're at it, get The Money Masters, the preeminent film on the globalist first and greatest power, the banking, the fractional reserve system. So get The Money Masters while you're at Infowars.com or call toll-free to get both films at 888-253-3139, 888-253-3139. You can also just Google Money Masters and find their fine website. I think it's moneymasters.com. Going back to our guest, we're talking to Pat Carmack, the producer and director, and, of course, the fellow that narrated it and traveled all over the world. Just an amazing film, Bill Still. Pat, we were getting into the history of money, how this happened. You've got the floor. You and Bill just, again, go back and forth amongst yourselves.
Well, you know, the definition of money varies. There's different definitions out there. Aristotle defined it as, you know, simply a medium of exchange. And more recently, the von Mises Austrian school has defined it as a commodity that's used as a medium of exchange, which is a nuance that results in people advancing the gold standard more than those who understand Aristotle. But for Aristotle, it was anything. It's anything that people agree on can be used as a medium of exchange, so we get beyond the barter system. In a complex society, if someone builds a car, for instance, it's very hard for them to trade it for groceries. There has to be some medium that has a value that can be applied to both of those items. So you can sell a car for money, and you can buy groceries for money. And what it's, again, what it's constituted by is just subject to different definitions and cultural heritages. You're aware that in this country, when the original discoverers came here, the Native Americans used wampum or seashells. It's perfectly all right. In Oceania and certain islands, they use large rocks that have a hole in them. And we use paper. At one time, our paper had some tie to gold. It no longer does. So money is really whatever people agree to accept in exchange for goods or services. So that's the formal definition of it. As a practical matter, you know, the most common forms of money became gold and silver over time because they're relatively rare. They have other valuable uses, and they're durable, and so they have various qualities that lend themselves. So, for instance, you couldn't use mercury because the liquid, you can't put it in your pocket and so forth. So these had various qualities that helped facilitate that use, but there's nothing intrinsically about gold or silver that makes them more valuable, more useful as money.
Caesar, for example, was very popular with the population because he made coins, he made money plentiful. These coins were not necessarily gold and silver coins. They were copper coins primarily, actually. He just announced that, you know, this would be the coin of the realm, and so they circulated just like money. Gold and silver is not necessary for coinage or for money. Caesar was very popular. He won the hearts of the people with this plentiful supply of government-issued money. He built the Roman Empire. And as a matter of fact, that's good for the people, but if it's good for the people, who is it bad for? It was bad for the senators, and so that's why the Senate murdered him.
In
1100 A.D., King Henry in England got tired of the goldsmiths either lending out their gold money plentifully or hoarding it and reducing the money supply. When they reduce the money supply, what happens? It's just like when the money supply in your pocket is reduced. You feel poor. A depression sets in. When you have plenty of money, you have plenty of money in your pocket, and you spend freely. It's the good times. Well, what the goldsmiths found out is that beyond their own pocketbook, they could control the political destiny of the sovereign, of the king. If they created a depression, they didn't get the blame. The king got the blame, just as we see today. The Federal Reserve has caused this problem with our financial system right now, and who's getting the blame? The president, just as the next president will get even greater blame, no matter which president it is. So King Henry in 1100 A.D. got tired of this. He created his own money. It was not gold or silver coins, which the goldsmiths, of course, had a monopoly on. It was merely sticks of polished wood with notches cut in the sticks to denote the denomination, and then the stick was split down the middle to prevent counterfeiting. These were called tally sticks. Just as in the Roman Empire, once there was plentiful government-issued money outside of the hands of the goldsmiths, who, of course, hoarded all the profit from money, when they were issuing only their gold coins, suddenly that profit went to the government, and so the greatest empire in the history of the world, the British Empire, the empire upon which the sun never set, was built on the back of this tally stick money,
Tally stick served as money for over 700 years until once the Bank of England, the first privately owned central bank in England, became established, they eventually were able to outlaw the tally stick system.
Okay, Bill.
So that is what the essence of this is. That's what Abraham Lincoln did with issuing greenback money. That is money issued by the Congress of the United States. Yes, it's fiat money. Yes, they can abuse it. But they are electable.
Bill?
The Federal Reserve is not electable, and they abuse it anyway.
Bill, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I just wanted to go back, because you're covering so much, and this is great, exactly what I'm able to hear and understand. And I meant to get into our current financial system and the fiat system now. But going back to explain to people, the goldsmiths, to explain fractional reserve banking, let's say they had 1,000 ounces of gold. They soon learned that people didn't want to carry their gold around with them. They wanted to store it there in their vault, that they could loan out 5, 10, 20, 30 times in little gold certificates to people and then get interest on those, and that people rarely all came at once wanting their physical gold. So I wanted to go back and explain that and just state that I agree with you. If we go back on a gold standard, the rich families have dominated and hoarded the gold to probably one of the greatest vertical integrations we've ever seen, and that will be a new monopoly that they control. But if we have a transparent monetary reform and have a fiat system, like with Lincoln, that the bankers killed him over, that then it makes that artificial input that is currency not be as important anymore, and it does make goods and services and true trade what society centered around, and then we see our prosperity explode. So I totally agree with you. It's a historical fact. I just wanted to go back and ask you and Pat to maybe flesh that out a bit more.
Yeah, well, the interest, instead of going into the hands of these families, because it's a gold-backed currency, goes into the hands of the general public for the welfare of everyone equally.
But let's explain.
I'm the narrator of the film. Pat isn't. Pat was the producer of the film.
I understand. Bill, I understand that. We need to also be clear that our current fiat system, the profit from the interest, basically goes back to the private bank. So they get the power from the interest as well. This is their fiat system. People then start debating, because the Federal Reserve and the private families have a fiat, they then start thinking, well, gold must be good because it's the opposite of a fiat. I think we need to explain that either way, we don't want a gold standard or a silver standard under them, and we don't want a fiat system under them. We want them out of it. Then we can have a national debate about what we do want.
That's correct.
You understand the problem quite deeply. We were under a gold system during the Great Depression of the late 20s and 30s, so gold is not the answer.
Yeah, if you go back a step before you mentioned about the goldsmiths, at that time there was essentially a gold standard. There were other forms of money, but gold and silver predominated. People, as you mentioned, did not want to carry that around. Often if they were engaged in a large transaction, they couldn't physically carry it around. And so what they did is they deposited it with the goldsmiths, who already had vaults to protect their gold candlesticks and jewelry and so forth. And they received a receipt from the goldsmith. And so pretty soon everyone started depositing their gold and silver with the goldsmiths, and they traded these receipts. Originally, the owner of the receipt had to go back to the goldsmith and say, write this out to Bill. But ultimately, they became bearer notes, so they could simply be traded between the individuals, and the gold never left the goldsmith's vault. Well, people came into the goldsmiths and wanted to borrow money, and the goldsmiths had gold of their own, and they also had this other gold that people had deposited there, and they would loan them these receipts. But no one did an audit or check to see how much gold was in their vaults, of course. So the goldsmith soon learned that because not everyone walked in the same day to cash in the receipts for gold or silver, in fact very few did, that they could start loaning more of these out than they actually had gold in deposit. In fact, they could loan it out on the other people's gold who were unaware it was happening. And ultimately they found out they could loan it out beyond the quantity of gold and silver they had entirely. The amount they did this originally back in, say, the 1600s, 15 and 1600s, would be typically about 3 to 1 up to perhaps 5 to 1. So if they had for instance, $10,000 in gold in the vault and might loan out $50,000 in these gold receipts and charge interest on the ones they had loaned out. When this was discovered occasionally, when people would find out in due to some economic calamity or some reason the community needed more money and they wanted to go get their gold and the goldsmith didn't have that much, a number of them were actually hung. It was against the law. It was a capital offense. It was fraud.
And so then the goldsmiths amassed great power. They internationalized so they could run from country to country. The family split up for safety. They developed their own intelligence networks that were the most sophisticated. They began to pay off local lords and royals for protection from the mob, and then the corruption began setting in, what would you say, by 1600-1700 or so, to where now they can go 10 to 1, 20 to 1. But, I mean, I guess that digresses. Do you guys want to comment on that?
Well, no, you're basically correct. That's right, and the timing's about right. It reached a national scale where nations, or, you know, typically it was aristocracy back in the 17th century, needed to borrow money for various wars. And so they would go to the goldsmiths, and the goldsmiths would give them, in essence, this fake money. They formed into corporations called banks, which is simply a word that comes from benches, where these transactions took place in Italy in earlier days. But essentially, they were just corporate bodies or groups of these people, these goldsmiths, who grouped together and loaned the money to the governments. Well, the governments then paid interest on it, and so wealth became more and more concentrated. And you're right, they used this money to corrupt the political system.
And then pretty soon it didn't matter if they cheated you. Nobody got in trouble, and they would just send out the guard to attack the small middle classes when they got ripped off. Just absolutely amazing. Well, please continue. This is riveting information for people, and for those that don't know, that's who the New World Order is. Is it's basically an amalgamation of European royalty with the goldsmiths, who've all intermarried, and they now own the planet.
Yeah, by 1668, the Riksbank in Sweden, which was privately owned, was loaning money that they created to the government of Sweden. But they didn't actually create the national currency. That happened when bankers in Amsterdam financed the Glorious Revolution, which was when William III and Mary invaded England, overthrew the Stuarts, and so forth. Payback was they were allowed to create the Bank of England, which was privately owned until World War II, when it was nationalized. And the Bank of England, which most Englishmen assumed was a government entity, was in fact privately owned. And the Bank of England created money out of nothing. It loaned it to the British government, which used it to expand the empire. The interest was paid through taxes. The taxes were put on the common man. And there you had the transfer of wealth from the common man to the bankers. And the growth of the empire, which required massive borrowing by the government, actually facilitated this transfer of wealth to the bankers. So you can see where imperialism becomes something that the bankers desire and actively promote. And wars as well, because it's part of it. They're very expensive. Government borrows the money for wars, and the bankers profit. That brings us up to after the Bank of England, we had essentially the same process take place in the United States. In the colonial days, the Bank of England was providing the money, the paper money, in the colonies. The colonists didn't like that, and they began to create their own money called colonial script. And Bill, do you want to talk about the script a bit?
Well, yeah, and in fact, Benjamin Franklin was a big supporter of the United States creating its own money. When he was ambassador to England, he was talking to officials from the Bank of England, and they asked him, "Why is America so rich?" And Franklin said, "That's easy, because in America we create our own money and have no interest to pay to no one." Well, the Bank of England quickly put an end to that by passing the Currency Act. And what did that do? It outlawed American paper money, because America, there wasn't much gold in America, but there was a thriving economy. They outlawed American paper money and put America onto the gold standard, forcing payment only in gold coins. So that created a tremendous depression. It would be just like
if you had a bunch of paper money in your wallet and somebody outlawed the paper money in your wallet and said you had to have bluebird feathers to pay.
And the country bank, almost fell apart.
Bluebird feathers, well, you'd be in bad shape. Well, in any case, Franklin later said that this depression that set in as a result of America being forced back onto a gold standard was really the root cause of the American Revolution. Just an astonishing fact when you understand the implications.
Yeah, everything revolves around this. Your whole lives, your financial future, your entire world revolves around this interview, around these issues, and around what's covered in the film, The Money Masters, available at InfoWars.com. We'll be right back with our amazing guests.
Cyrus Jones from 1810 to 1913 made his great-grandchildren believe you could live to 103.
We've lived in complete bondage financially
103 is forever
since 1913.
So, Cyrus Jones,
our presidents all
forever.
Fought against the bankers. Many were assassinated over it.
When you dig
others had attempted murder committed against them, like Andrew Jackson. Every American understood the private bankers, the goldsmiths, how the scam worked. Even when everyone knew we fell to them in 1913 through trickery. The bankers came out against the Federal Reserve, and that ruse fooled everyone, even though they'd secretly authored it. The film covers it all, The Money Masters, again, available at InfoWars.com. Let's say you know all about this. Well, your friends, your family, your neighbors, your pastor, your school teachers, professors, they don't know. And we're not going to turn around what's happening in this society unless we do. The bankers are raping us, squeezing us, laughing at us, engineering everything you're seeing right now. I tell you, the time has flown by. They're with us for another 40 minutes or so, and I got to have them up for 2-3 hours in the future to take calls. It's the producer, one of the leading experts out there on the situation, Pat Carmack, and, of course, the fellow that is in the film, traveled around, and, of course, narrates it all over the world. Bill Still is our guest as well. Gentlemen, please continue breaking down what we're facing, the basic history of this. I think a good place, we're talking about American history. Tell folks about old Andrew Jackson, who don't know. I mean, on his deathbed, he said at the Hermitage, "What of all the things you've done in your life, what are you most proud of?" This was an incredible person, you know, whose life is more unbelievable than a fictional character like Rambo. I mean, he made Davy Crockett pale in significance. But he was more proud of, quote, killing the bank.
If I could just say, jump before then a little bit, the very root of our problem was correctly identified by Thomas Jefferson. He put it this way: if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, which is, of course, the situation today, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations which grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. And that's exactly the situation we see going on this year, 2008. And nothing, there is only one solution to this. No amount of money they pump into the system through their various guises is going to work. None of this is going to work. Only one thing will work, and that's monetary reform as per the bill that Pat Carmack has authored.
We're going to spend time on that at the end, but now I want to continue with who the enemy is, because they have to understand how the system works. Private families who have unlimited liquidity, they can buy anybody and anything. People will kill their mothers for this fiat currency, and what we're getting is bondage. Andrew Jackson.
Well, if we Andrew Jackson fought the first Bank of the United States, and then the Second Bank of the United States when he was president. If we step back just a couple of years, after the Revolution dealt a blow to the Bank of England and the United States was free to create their own money, right away the European bankers tried to finance a replacement in this country called the Bank of North America. And we go into this history in the video, but very briefly, it lasted from 1781 to 1785 when it was killed. It was succeeded by another attempt called the First Bank of the United States. And this one was killed in 1811.
All right, stay there. Got a break for 70 seconds. Right back to both of you. We're talking to the makers of the incredible film, The Money Masters. You need to get it today, folks. It's so vital. Infowars.com. Because this shapes our entire history and who we are today. All right, this is the central issue. We'll be right back.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We have the man who traveled the world and narrated and presented the incredible film, The Money Masters, Bill Still, and we have the man who produced and directed it, Pat Carmack, on the line. Pat recognized one of the leading experts on the private run-for-profit Federal Reserve. I already knew he was one of the top experts out there, but I just love and feel like I know Bill Still. And it was the first time we've personally talked because of seeing his film, five or six times when locals here aired it on TV over and over again back in the late 1990s. And I already knew a lot about the Federal Reserve, but they laid it out so well. I mean, I loved Gilbert Griffin's film, Creature from Jekyll Island, but that's more one-dimensional. This is three-dimensional and so important. Okay, we've gotten up to Andrew Jackson. I mean, Americans don't know the struggles we've had, and that we had 10, 11, 12% growth rates previously, zero inflation until the bankers take over in 1913. But going back to the 1830s and Andrew Jackson.
Well, with the if you step back to Hamilton and Washington, Washington was not a financial expert, obviously. He was a terrific first president and founder, but Hamilton pushed the idea of the private banks. He was connected to European financial powers. And you had opposed to him Jefferson, Monroe, Adams, almost everybody. But because of the needs of the government in Washington, he didn't side with Jefferson. He sided with Hamilton because he just didn't understand it. And that, there was a lot of ignorance about it at that time.
There were internal struggles within the government.
That's right. And Hamilton's view prevailed briefly with the First Bank of the United States. It had a 20-year charter. When it expired in 1811, there was an attempt to restore the charter, and that was defeated. In 1816, the Second Bank of the United States, which is very similar to the Fed, and again, it gives this private money creation power out of the government into private hands because these banks were owned by private stock.
That'd be like if I called my business federal government bookstore and just claimed I was the federal government selling books. I mean, it's the same thing.
Right. And so the Second Bank of the United States, chartered in 1816, was the one Andrew Jackson fought against. He fought to have the charter defeated and not renewed. He was ultimately successful. In the whole process, there was an assassination attempt against him. Both guns misfired, so he was spared.
I mean, is that not providence?
Well, it is, of course. And the United States was spared falling under the control of bankers at that time. So we had kind of a free, laissez-faire banking situation until the Civil War, and there was tremendous prosperity and growth in the country. And that was, with very few exceptions in that period, that was basically the situation until the middle of the Civil War, when Lincoln needed money to finance the war effort. He got Congress to provide it initially by simply issuing money called greenbacks, because the back of them was printed with green ink, but it was just U.S. notes. So they were government notes that were used to pay bills, to pay soldiers, to pay for ammunition and so forth.
That's right. The European bankers had sidled up to him, and tried to get him into debt, and he said no, and they just pulled their hair out with rage. Meanwhile, they were funding the South, trying to break the country up.
That's right. It's not uncommon for major bankers to fund both sides in a war, because they're after primarily profits, unfortunately. Congress eventually was initially supported Lincoln and these U.S. notes, which he had about $400 million issued at that time, which is a colossal amount of money, to finance the war. But then Congress turned against him as the bankers financed politicians who were not in favor of these U.S. notes. So Lincoln had to compromise. I think it was in 1863, and in order to get more of these U.S. notes, he had to reestablish the central banking system through the National Banking Act.
We'll take it from there when we get back. Long segment coming up with both of our amazing guests. PrisonPlanet.com. It's been newly designed. Check it out.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Bob Carmack, the maker of an amazing film, The Money Masters. I can think of no film overall that is more central to our entire world. They are the great architects. They took control of the world through fraud. They have steered our societal development for 100 years at least in the Western world. They had almost complete domination in England 200 years ago. And of course, we skipped over how they ran the scam with Napoleon saying he'd won to make them run on the banks and then buy it all up. I mean, there's so much to talk about, and I want to spend some time on monetary reform. The problem is when you've got a general public that really thinks there's no oil because of peak oil, the media tells them there's no more oil, that's why they're paying more, not that the dollar's been devalued. When you've got a public that doesn't even know what dollar devaluation means, what currency inflation means, what hyperinflation means, and I'm not being sardonic, I'm not even that smart. I mean, I want to make that clear. It's so obvious. Our whole history is struggling against these people. And you brought us up to the Civil War. Please continue, Pat and Bill.
Well, if I could just insert a quote by Otto von Bismarck during the, just shortly after the Lincoln era. Bismarck, of course, was Chancellor of Germany. He put it this way, quote, "Not to be doubted, I know of absolute certainty that the division of the United States into two federations of equal force was decided long before the Civil War by the high financial powers of Europe. These bankers were afraid that the United States, if they remained as one block and were to develop as one nation, would attain economic and financial independence, which would upset the capitalist domination of Europe over the world." And also something else Pat neglected to mention was, and I'll let him speak to it because he has more facts at the tip of his fingers than I do, and that's the result of the United States not rechartering the first bank of the United States in 1811 was the British threatened to invade the country if the bank was not rechartered, and of course the recharter bill did not pass Congress, and that the British did invade, and that was the absolute root cause of the War of 1812.
Well, let me stop you. The IMF, the World Bank, their documents have come out. That's why Serbia was attacked. They had their own bank. That's why Iraq got shut up and told to invade Kuwait and then blown to bits because they wouldn't allow the central banks to come in and take over. Every rogue nation on the PNAC list is a country that isn't dominated by the private central banks. So this is a hive Borg that took us over a long time ago. Go ahead.
Yeah, in fact, on that point, if people are interested, they can go to the IMF annual reports, and there's a chart that's in each one. It's called the Nations in Arrears, and the Nations in Arrears almost invariably are those that are either invaded, there's a coup, they're bombed. If any nation that has things like that happen to them or one of those nations in arrears, it's in effect a collection effort. And it's to get them in line with the fractional reserve banking system of the West. But to go back to Lincoln and bring it up rather quickly, he had to compromise with the New York bankers at that time. So he passed the National Banking Act of 1863 and then 1864. This restored much of the power, not all, and it was decentralized to the banks so they could create money, but it was limited. That situation prevailed, and I'll skip through some of the minor things that happened in the interim, but prevailed until the 20th century. And in 1907, there was an artificial panic created by the J.P. Morgan interest in New York City, which resulted in the bankruptcy of some of the local banks in New York City. And there was a call that they financed for bank reform. And this was, of course, engineered by them. And the bank reform they wanted was the restoration of a national central bank, privately owned. And ultimately, to cut that history a little short, it resulted in the passage in 1913 under Woodrow Wilson of the Federal Reserve Act.
And for those that don't know, I don't want to cut this too short because it's so central. They ran all these big newspaper articles saying, oh, it's horrible, don't pass the Federal Reserve Act, J.P. Morgan and the Rockefellers, and oh my gosh, it's so evil, don't do it. And that fooled the public into supporting it, but still there wasn't enough support, so they passed it in the dead of night a few days before Christmas, as they always do. And then they had their dupe, Woodrow Wilson, before they poisoned him on the train, who wrote letters saying, I've been scammed, it's a private takeover, the New World Order is bad, you know, it's a British aristocracy takeover. And that's all in the history, but again, we have a public who doesn't even know what a continent is or who the vice president is, so how are they going to know about all this?
Well, that's right. The Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt and Taft were both financed in part by bankers, hoping they would support a central banking act. They didn't. They both opposed it. And that's why they had to get a Democrat in. Of course, William Jennings Bryan had opposed it most dramatically in his Cross of Gold speech. But Bryant failed to get elected president, and the bankers financed this unknown Woodrow Wilson. He was the president of Princeton.
I want to stop you again. We've gone from every newspaper, every president, everyone knowing, huge debates, to it's a conspiracy theory, the Federal Reserve isn't private, everything's wonderful.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Alex. The public at that time was very well informed. Most of the leading politicians were. They had to find ignorant ones, which wasn't easy, to raise up in order to use them to get their bills passed. And Wilson was one of them. He was totally ignorant on economics. He was schooled in it by agents for the bankers, and he ultimately signed a Federal Reserve Act, which he later deeply regretted when he understood what he had done.
Yeah, Edward Mandel House from right here in Austin, Texas.
That's right. House was told him to support the act. Some of the senators who passed it, in fact, they couldn't find anybody who'd read the thing. And it was passed, as you said, it was during the Christmas break. There is a mythology on it that really didn't have enough votes and so forth. It did, but it was done when many of the senators and representatives were gone. I think it was signed on Christmas Day, in fact, by Wilson. And so it became the law of the land. Whether or not there's legal flaws enough to it to attack is another argument, and there probably are. But nonetheless, it is the present law, and it allows bankers, private banks, to create money. And the mechanism for that we can go into here, and it's probably a good place to do it.
And now they can crony whoever they like. They can use their own loans to buy up all the industries, assets, governments. And now I want to get to what they're currently doing to us today. I mean, we can go through the National Security Act and how they built the police state apparatus or the federally chartered state police and how we're all federalized now. But these criminals, if they're fully going to social engineer us and really turn us into chattel slaves physically, not just financially, they've got to have a police state mechanism in place to make sure we don't ever, if we ever do find out, put them in prison for their crimes. So now we have the police state grid and the prisons in place, and now they're bringing us down to the final, taking us from any semblance of a free market into a new feudal state.
Well, you know, there's two arguments on that. One of them is that, you know, the best form of slavery are slaves who want their slavery, who desire it and don't really even know what freedom is or seek it. And that's accomplished, you know, in history through ignorance, you know, through making sure that people aren't educated, don't understand.
And through debt, you know.
And through debt, that's certainly the case. And so we've seen the middle class, for instance, disappear since about 1971 at the rate of about 1% per year. And so the average American's considerably worse off financially, to the point where now when the average American retires at about age 65, or when they used to retire at age 65, they have zero net wealth. Now, 100 years ago, at around 1900, typically an American family owned a farm debt-free. So they had a means of production, they had no debt, and they were independent, and they had independent thought. In 100 years, that's reversed as we've urbanized. the average American at 65 owns nothing, which is incredible. And
they're systematically changing laws to shut down the family farms and ranches. The Tyson chickens don't have to have tracker chips, but everybody else is due to shut them down. I mean, it's all happening now.
Yeah, and the nature of the system is that there's never enough money for the populace, so that increasingly people have to go into debt. And because all of our money is created out of debt, it's a debt money system. And so how that's actually accomplished is typically what happens in this country. Let's take, for instance, a year like the current one where the deficit's going to exceed $400 billion. Well, where does the government get that? If they don't raise taxes and they haven't sufficiently to do that, then they have to borrow it. If they borrowed $400 billion on the credit markets, it'd collapse the economy because there'd be no money for anything else, no money to finance industry or house buying or anything. So what they do is the Federal Reserve, in the case, using the example of needing $400 billion, the government needing to borrow that, the Federal Reserve steps in and buys $40 billion, or 10% of the amount needed, of government bonds. Or lately they've used it for other purposes, but typically for government bonds. So where do they get that $40 billion? Well, the Fed creates it out of nothing. It's on a keyboard. That money's transferred to the banks of the sellers of those bonds. That could be you or me or anybody that owns a government bond, T-bill, so forth. So they buy those. So that $40 billion goes into those banks. Those banks now, through fractional reserve banking, can loan out 90% of that money. So a $40 billion, they can loan out $36 billion. Well, that's,
and then they create subsidiaries and leverage it out again to the power of infinity.
Sure. Well,
and if you don't like it, a SWAT team will drop by and kill you. Gentlemen, we got a break. When we come back, I want to talk about what you think is going to happen now that we're going into this phase of hyperinflation. And then I want to keep it till 40 after. I want to do 10 minutes on solutions. And, folks, you got to get the film, 3-plus hours long, available at Infowars.com, $19.95. It is the Money Masters. It is. You'll have a master's degree in this once you've seen it. Or you can remain ignorant. We'll be right back with our amazing guest after this quick break.
We will not be forgotten.
Willie Nelson says it all right here.
I am a Midwest farmer. I make a living off the land. I ride a John Deere tractor. I'm a liberated man. The rain, it hasn't fallen since the middle of July. And if it don't come soon, my crops will die. The bankman says he likes me, but there's nothing he can do. He tells me that he's coming, but the clouds are coming too. He ain't my friend. And I'll ride again.
Well, we've got a former banker who is our friend on the line with us. Pat Carmack, the producer, the maker of the Money Masters, and the fellow went all over the world and did a splendid job. Former newspaper editor and reporter of presenting the information all over the world. Bill Still, this is a short segment, the final segment with you guys coming up with solutions. But right now, gentlemen, I mean, Ron Paul, Joseph Stiglitz, the head of New York Business School, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, I mean, I've interviewed them all. They say if things aren't reversed, and they're not going to be, it looks like, within 2.5 years, a hyperinflationary depression that makes 1929 U.S. look tame, more of a German Weimar Republic type blood in the streets.
Well, that's correct. And unfortunately, since you are convinced by the U.S. note solution that we offer, you're going to be one of the few. There's going to be an increasing drumbeat for a gold-backed solution. That is the alternative solution. That's why the bankers unloaded Fort Knox back in the late 1960s, early 70s. That's my belief. That's
no,
why
I agree.
They
always know that Ponzi schemes come to an end. They got to start a new one.
And they will be the ones ultimately behind and funding
this return to a gold-backed currency. That's what I believe is behind the Ludwig von Mises Institute. And, you know, you're going to be swimming against the tide. That's because
well,
that's
I want to be clear. I think those pushing for gold mean well because it would be better than the current system at its end. But you're right. It puts us just back into another monopoly of currency situation.
Yeah, as long as fractional reserve banking itself, the ability of these private banks to create money, isn't the primary focus, if it's redirected to the nature of money, whether it be gold or silver or, you know, any other form of a basket of commodities has been proposed, like, you know, a portion of wheat and rice and so on. Anything like that's a red herring. It doesn't matter if, in fact, the private banks are still creating the money, because they're still going to be concentrating wealth more and more into their own hands.
That's it. It's real simple. It's a rigged game. Who always wins a game of Monopoly? The bank. The bank always wins. They have an 18-wheeler full of funny money, folks, and you're fighting your life out for a few little scraps of pink and purple and green paper.
Well, we kind of hopped over William Jennings Bryan. Bryan gave what was widely considered to be the most important speech at the Democratic National Convention when he was running for president. And in the conclusion, he put it this way: we will answer their demand for a gold standard, in other words, a return to a gold-backed money, by saying to them, you shall not press down upon the brow of labor this crown of thorns. You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold. Bryan understood the situation.
By the way, I'm flattered by the New York Times calling me the William Jennings Bryan of the 9/11 Truth Movement. Just not tooting my horn. It's just crazy to be compared to him. Go ahead.
Well, you should be flattered, because that's high praise. You know, Brian's one of the people who's been expunged from history, just like much of Andrew Jackson's heroic acts to save the country from the bankers, because typically they either own or have a major interest or advertise in a way with publishing houses, so that this whole part of important part of history is just gone. So here's an interesting little quote from Sir Josiah Stamp, the director of the Bank of England in 1928, and he was the second wealthiest man in England at the time. He said, if you wish to remain the slaves of bankers and pay the cost of your own slavery, let them continue to create money. And we've got in the videos, you know, there's many quotes like that. There's a lot
hundreds.
Of
hundreds. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And who's the fellow that does that voiceover?
He was a radio talk show host who is now deceased. I forget his name, but he just had a great voice, didn't he?
Well, I'm just telling you, Bill, that, you know, because I've made a few films myself, you're a great presenter and a great voiceover, too. I'm just a big fan of you. Final segment, gentlemen.
You.
Oh, you bet. Final segment, gentlemen. I want to come back, and, I mean, as a one-off film, you guys went to master level out of the gates. You guys are naturals. I wish you'd make more films. When we come back, I want to do a final segment with you on solutions. Then Steve Watson joins us from London, England. He got picked up by the secret police, all part of the new freedom. Stay with us. Final segment with our guest. With their fabulous wealth, the European private banking families married into the royalty. This predatory hybrid of control freak, merciless psychopaths engineered and funded the modern eugenics movement, the movement of propaganda and advertising. They have dumbed the population down. They're carrying out chemical weapon and biological weapon soft kill operations against the whole planet. They've decided they want to play God and reduce the world's population forcibly by 80-90% in all of their public treatises. They are setting up a worldwide police state grid to reduce us to 500 million. That's the other side of the story. They've got to bankrupt you so you're a peon slave so they can carry out their eugenics on you. You see, if you're middle class, you'll be educated, informed, and have a chance to combine forces as a middle class to overthrow the hegemonic corrupt elite. The enemy has studied history. That's why they call it the final revolution. They intend on damming up resistance forever and ensuring their monopoly of power forever as the elite and their progeny travel to the stars. It is the ultimate greediness and self-centeredness, and the words I'm telling you are their own. They intend to blot us out of history, to strike our names off all the monuments. We will not even be remembered in history if the elite has their way. Their evil has metastasized into a nightmare vision from hell itself. In closing, with our amazing guests, Pat Carmack and Bill Still of the Money Masters film, solutions, gentlemen, solutions. How do we put your Monetary Reform Act that I do believe, and I've read scores of books from all different sides and studied it and interviewed most of the world's experts, I believe your plan is preeminent. But first, there should be a public debate about why we're going into this hardship, and then a debate so the people can choose the system they want. But unfortunately, as you were saying, we're going to be thrown from one fire into another pit. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Well, I'd like to take credit for the act, and I'm sure Bill would too, but really its antecedents include Milton Friedman and many other monetary reformers. But the essence of it is very simple. It's that the United States government pays off its national debt with United States notes, and that
that are debt-free
that it creates out of nothing. Now, the objection to that is always raised, well, that would be hyperinflationary because there's $9.5 trillion in national debt, and that would be true. And so to take care of that part of it, and this was Friedman's brilliant contribution, is at the same time you simultaneously increase the reserve requirements for banks from 10%, which it is now, which is what allows them to create 90% of the U.S. money supply.
Yes, your inflationary plan curve is microscopic compared to the black hole vortex that fractional reserve banking creates, where it's mathematically a certainty designed to implode all wealth unto itself.
Well, right, but actually, if you increase the reserve requirement to 100% during the same time period where you're paying off the national debt, which we propose is a year, then there is no inflation. They exactly equal each other. So it's a brilliant solution that is, you know, principally earlier reformers and Milton Friedman's that the video goes into. And it's also detailed on our website. It's on the page that says Monetary Reform Act under it's the MoneyMasters.com website.
That's right, MoneyMasters.com to get the Monetary Reform Act.
Yeah, it's the word "the" in front of it. And you can read the whole thing. It's 18 sections, and we go into considerable detail in it. But that would abolish the ability of private banks to create money.
This is the stake. Do we have the energy to approach the vampires and to drive it through their hearts?
Well, that's a question of political will. But the last time that there was a reasonable prospect of reform was in the Great Depression. And, of course, as many economic commentators have noted, we're in the closest thing to it since that time period. At that time, you had a lot of brilliant reform proposals, and they were promoted by people who were widely listened to by the American people, including Bob La Follette, Huey Long, Father Coughlin. These had tens of millions of listeners and followers, and people were becoming educated about how the economic system works. And many partial reform proposals were passed at that time, but not the Federal Reserve was not abolished. The war intervened. But so we're in a similar situation where people are, you know, the economy is becoming so bad that people are paying attention, they're reading, they're listening. And, of course, shows like this help educate the public.
And I'd just like to say that the argument that you'll hear against this is that bankers should be responsible for creating money. They're the only ones that know how to do it.
And they said that in 1913 and promised no more panics that were microscopic compared to the Great Depression, and they engineered the Great Depression just a few years later.
And what this is a plutocracy. That concept is the very basis of plutocracy, which is rule by the rich. That's what we have today. We do not have a democracy. We have a plutocracy. If you believe in democracy, you must believe that the closest federally elected body, the people, the Congress, should control money. And no less an authority than Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, you know, another objection is, well, we're just turning it back over to Congress, which we've said the bankers control. Well, that's true, but the bankers control it through the creation of wealth. If you take away that vehicle from them, Then you begin to rebuild the independence of
Congress.
And
you put the power of fiat currency in the hands of the people, and you educate them about its nature, and it's very transparent, and you debate it and discuss it, and then it energizes back to 10-12% growth rates and back to where one person can work and the family can have milk and honey. With our manufacturing systems today, we could all live like kings, but the elite aren't going to allow that. And so this is your entire future, ladies and gentlemen. You better go to themoneymasters.com, read the monetary reform section. If you don't, shame on you, and you better go to InfoWars.com and get the DVD for $19.95 while you're at it. Get my new film, Truth Rising, and have groups to your house. Show this to people. Show this to your local economics professor or your business teacher in public school. People are very receptive to this right now, and I hear them like blind sheep saying, oh, why is everything so expensive? I mean, they're so economically ignorant that I talk to business people, and they don't understand currency devaluation, how it's being done by design, and how the private banking families have put all their assets into real commodities and property, and then now they're leaving us at the tail end of the Ponzi scheme, holding the bag, and then now they're going to pose as saviors again. The Federal Reserve has said, oh, give us global power for a global bank, buy carbon credits from us. That'll be their new Ponzi bubble, along with the gold, as you were saying. And they've said, come to us. And you will, we will regulate all banks globally. We will, make you buy carbon credits. So they screw it all up, pose as the saviors. Not only do we have no hope of averting the disaster, but we have no hope of ever getting out of it if they're able to go to the next level. They've got their grid in place to make the Great Depression look like a Tea Party. And 8 million people, according to a major university study that came out last month in the Associated Press, starved to death during the Great Depression during the 9 years. We now are 90% urban, not 90% agrarian and rural, so it'll be much worse now. We're talking about, gentlemen, do you see any way of averting the depression they're engineering?
No, there's absolutely no way outside of the Monetary Reform Act. And everything else will come to naught.
Well, historically, I mean, there is, you know, one way that has been used is war, and because it changes the whole, you know, it results in all kinds of economic controls and so forth.
And that's a psychological diversion, so we accept the depression. The war is only meant as a salve, as a foil, as a shield for the bankers to go ahead and implode things, but then have us rally around them while they suck our blood.
That's right, and it also continues the process of concentrating more and more wealth in their hands even more rapidly.
Well, gentlemen, I want to close the interview with Professor Carol Quigley, renowned late Georgetown historian, President Clinton's mentor. The powers of financial capitalism had a far-reaching plan, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political systems of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. Their secret is that they have annexed from governments, monarchies, and republics, the power to create the world's money. And gentlemen, you have created a Rosetta Stone to expose and defeat the enemy. I salute you both, and I want to have you back up, both of you, for 2 hours in the near future to focus more on reform and the history and to take calls. I salute you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Take care. There they go. The producers of the Money Masters. Get it at InfoWars.com today or call toll-free 888-253-3139. It's in the shopping cart, and there's a link on the front page of InfoWars.com.